اشفع لنا عند الله
يا أبا عبد الله يا حسين ابن علي أيها الشهيد يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا
يا وجيها
عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله يا وجيها
عند الله
اشفع لنا
عند الله
يا أبا الحسن يا علي ابن الحسين يا زين العابدين أيها السجاد يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا
يا وجيها
عند الله اشفع لنا اشفع لنا
عند الله
يا أبا جعفر يا محمد ابن علي أيها الباقر يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا
يا
وجيها
عند الله
اشفع لنا يا أبا عبد الله يا جعفر ابن محمد أيها الصادق يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا
يا
وجيها
عند الله اشفع لنا
عند الله يا وجيها يا أبا إبراهيم يا موسى بن جعفر أيها الكاظم يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا. إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا أبا الحسن يا علي بن موسى أيها الرضا يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا. إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا أبا جعفر يا محمد بن علي أيها التقي الجواد يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا. إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا أبا الحسن يا علي بن محمد أيها الهادي النقي يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا. إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا. يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله. يا وجيها يا أبا محمد يا حسن بن علي أيها الزكي العسكري يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا. إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا. يا وجيها عند الله لنا عند الله يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله يا وسي الحسن والخلف الصالح الحجة أيها القائم المنتظر يا ابن رسول الله يا حجة الله على خلقه يا سيدنا ومولانا إنا توجهنا واستشفعنا وتوسلنا بك إلى الله وقدمناك بين يدي حاجاتنا يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا
عند الله
يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله يا وجيها عند الله اشفع لنا عند الله حاجات يا سادتي ومواليا إني توجهت بكم أئمتي وعدتي ليوم فقري وحاجتي إلى الله وتوسلت بكم إلى الله واستشفعت بكم إلى الله فاشفعوا لي عند الله واستنقذ ذنوبي من ذنوبي عند الله فإنكم وسيلتي إلى الله وبحبكم وبقربكم أرجو نجاة من الله فكونوا عند الله رجائي يا سادتي يا أولياء الله صلى الله عليهم أجمعين ولعن الله عداء الله ظالميهم من الأولين والآخرين آمين رب العالمين
اللهم صل على
محمد وآل محمد صلوات عباس جلدی آؤ مر جائے گی سکینہ عباس جلدی آؤ مر جائے گی سکینہ کب تک تماچے کھائے یہ غم زدہ سکینہ ڈوبا ہے بحر غم میں اب قلب کا سفینہ کہتی ہے ایسا جینا अम्मा कोई है जीना, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। है एक शम्मा भी नहीं है ज़ैनब जिसे जलाए, जिंदा में मेरी बच्ची खामोश हो न जाए। साहिल पे सोने वाले आ जाके चैन पाए, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। मासूम का गला भी बांधा गया रसन से, तकलीफ कैसे देखी जाए तेरी बहन से। होता है शोर गिरिया ज़ैनब के इस सुखन से, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। किस तरह मैं बताऊं क्या हाल है हमारा, देता है शिम्र ईजा रोती है बेसहारा। मासूम के लबों पर बस नाम है तुम्हारा, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। मारा गया है भाई अब्बास तुम नाए, शामे गरीब आई अब्बास तुम नाए। ये जुल्म ये तबाही अब्बास तुम नाए, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। साहिल पे कैसी गुजरी अब्बास क्या हुआ है, बच्ची तड़प रही है बस दम रुका हुआ है। एक मश्क पानी लेकर आने में देर क्या है, अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। अब्बास जल्दी आओ मर जाएगी सकीना। नारे सलवात।
محمد و آل محمد صلوات. بسم اللہ الرحمن.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Before I begin with the majlis for tonight, I just want to make a brief correction on what we mentioned last night. We talked about a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen about the difference between truth and falsehood being four fingers. And I just wanted to correct myself in case it came out the wrong way. The hadith mentions that when Imam Ali spoke about this difference between truth and falsehood, the four finger rule, he said that much of what you hear is falsehood and most of what you see or what you see is the truth. I believe I had actually reversed the order of the hadith. So if I did, I just wanted to clarify that the actual wordings of the commander were that much of what we hear is actually not reality. It's hearsay in most cases. It's he said, she said. But what we see is most of the times a reality. With that, one loud salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, please. A'udhu billah. Ya Ali. A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Alhamdulillahi alladhi hadana lihada wa ma kunna linahtadiya lawla an hadana Allah. Wa salatu wa salam ala ashraf al-anbiya wa sayyidi al-mursaleen. وشفي المذنبين سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين المنتجبين لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب الأصل والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنته دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم إلى الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين أما بعد رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. For the hastening of the advent of our 12th Imam, Imam al-Hujjah, one loud salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. When we look at the world that we live in today, there is definitely no doubt that where we as a species, where we as humanity have progressed to, is because of multiple factors. But at the top of all of those is the fact that we have excelled in our knowledge. Were it not for the fact that humanity has excelled in knowledge, we wouldn't be driving luxury cars around today, which, when you look at them, their sound system rival that of what we see in movie theaters. We would be riding a horse and a buggy. But because humanity has used their brains, their know-how, we have gotten to a point where our technology is such that our cars are at the pinnacle of, you know, modern machinery. Were not for knowledge and the pursuit of excellence in terms of what our mind can think of and eventually create, we wouldn't have these gadgets in our hands that we have today, which have replaced our home phone. They've replaced our television sets. They've replaced our computers for email and communication. And when we're bored, we can walk around and look for imaginary creatures in people's homes and centers. If we didn't have technology, we didn't have knowledge, we wouldn't have smartphones. All of these things that you and I are blessed to have today in our hands, in our homes, is all because of the fact that somebody in some company devised or thought that we needed to have a gadget to do X, Y, and Z. And so with our quest for perfection, for our quest of becoming better and better, in some cases becoming worse and worse, we came forth with this technology to make our lives more meaningful and purposeful. This evening, as we continue in this journey through the dua of our 12th Imam, of what he expects from you and I want to continue where we left off last night. Yesterday we talked about the requirement of you and I to be those who are obedient to Allah, to obey the commandments of Allah. And to also keep away from those things which would be keeping us or preventing us from reaching to Allah. And without a doubt, the prime factor which can lead you and I towards Allah is knowledge. Knowledge is the key. As the Western people would say, as you know, people like Kofi Annan has been quoted as saying, that knowledge is power. Imam Ali actually told us that 14 centuries ago, before Kofi Annan came to say that knowledge is power, he said, Al-ilmu sultan. Knowledge is authority, knowledge is power. Because Imam Ali realized, and a man like him, what can we say about a man like him, that he is the door to the city of knowledge? When he says that knowledge is power, unfortunately as a Muslim ummah, we forgot this word. We forgot this concept of being an authority by knowledge. And we left the path of knowledge and we became followers rather than trailblazers in the history of the world. So tonight I want to look at this part of the dua where the 12th Imam says, and what we're asking for from Allah, وَمْلَعْ قُلُوبَنَا بِالْعِلْمِ وَالْمَعْرِفَةِ. Fill my heart, fill this vessel in my body, not a physical heart, but this spiritual heart, with ilm, with knowledge, and ma'rifat, which is a higher level of knowledge, of awareness. When we look at where we are today, how much humanity has either progressed or digressed, depends how you look at the equation, it all comes back down to knowledge. But even of what we see in the world today, that NASA can launch a spaceship into outer space, not only look at the moon and analyze that, but it can get to the furthest depths of the solar system. It can land a rocket on another planet, take soil samples and return those results back to Earth. All of this knowledge that we have, and whatever we will come, and whatever we will progress to in the time leading up to the zuhur of our 12th Imam. When the 6th Imam spoke about this, and the Imams of Ahlul Bayt talked about a lot of these things, the 6th Imam told us that all of the things that you as humanity will ever be able to accomplish, all of what the prophets have brought for humanity until the time of the zuhur of the Mahdi, is two parts of knowledge. The Imam says that knowledge is of 27 parts. He says 27 letters. But he says whatever humanity has up until the time of the zuhur of the Imam is only two letters. That means we are still short 25 doors of knowledge. And if we have got to where we have gotten today by that small amount of knowledge, we can maybe not even imagine where we will be when the Imam makes his advent and knowledge is perfected. As the hadith says that he would place his hand over the heads of the people and knowledge would become perfected. Now, scholars say that doesn't mean that we won't go to university. It means he will open up ways of thinking that we might not have thought about up until that time. Just to give you a brief visage of what will the latter days look like when the Imam makes his return. Because we're looking at knowledge tonight and the importance of learning and obviously returning and teaching that knowledge back to our community and our society. We're told in the traditions, there's some beautiful explanations given to us by the Imams of Ahlul Bayt of what to anticipate when that knowledge becomes perfected. We're told, for example, that a Muslim in the East will be able to see and speak to his Muslim brother or sister in the West of the earth without any gadgets. You know, today we have Skype and FaceTime and all of these apps that we use. We can see our families. People go for ziyarat and we see their selfies while they're in the haram. They'll take a selfie next to Maqam Ibrahim. We'll do a live video chat with our family while they're making tawaf. But we have a gadget in our hand, don't we? We have an app. We need Wi-Fi connectivity. We need 4G or 5G connectivity to transmit that. We're told at the time of the Imam that technology won't be needed. What would it be that we could talk and see our brothers and sisters in another part of the earth without technology in our hand? It's something that we probably can't even understand today. The hadith tell us that knowledge will become so wide and so perfected that farmers will have the best bumper crop year after year after year. You know, today they're having to go into GMO foods and make all of these changes to the actual essence of what we eat to increase the crop productivity, to make the most of the land. But we're told when the imam brings that knowledge, the farmers won't have to worry about GMO, you know, these genetically modified. We won't have to worry about Monsanto and all of these companies putting what they put into our food, and we're eating what they want us to eat. We're told that those who engage in the livestock industry, that their animals will be healthy. They won't have to be fed all these hormones and all of these things. All of this will be through the blessings of knowledge of the 12th Imam. In fact, the hadith even talk about when the dhuhur of the Imam takes place, knowledge will be at such a level that we won't need the sun to provide us with our energy. Now we know that solar energy comes from the sun. Even our wind turbines that uses sun to create the wind and all of that, and even some of the fossil fuels that we have. So if we don't need the sun as a source of energy and as a byproduct, what kind of knowledge will our 12th Imam bring to us? That we don't have to go through all of these challenges that we're going through today. You know, people know all of the challenges about shipping oil from Alberta through British Columbia to the coast and trying to, you know, build these massive pipelines and all the uproar that the people are causing. But when the Imam brings this knowledge, this 25 parts of knowledge that you and I are missing, all of this will be history. He'll bring forth something that will be so revolutionary. It'll be so in need of our times that it will solve all of humanity's woes and problems. And obviously at that time we'll have a system, a government of justice, a government of equality, such that all of these social, economic, political problems will be a thing of the past. They'll be something that we'll read about in history books that our great-great-grandchildren will probably study about. That, you know, in 2016 the problem was like this, and how did people deal with it? We will be just studied in books of history. So when we look at this line of the dua, to fill our heart with knowledge and ma'rifat, we come to look at what does it mean for us as believers to work at becoming better equipped in knowledge, to ensure that when the Imam, he makes his advent, when he returns, how do we fit into that grand scheme of things to help him and assist him in that movement to bring about this change in, amongst humanity and the change in society? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. When we look at knowledge, we know that there are so many branches of knowledge that we can study. You just look through, you know, a prospectus from a university, and you'll see there's hundreds if not thousands of courses somebody can take. You look at the technical schools, you look at the universities, you look at all of these institutes of higher learning, and there's so much that we can learn. And this is a fact that even Rasulullah mentioned. There's a beautiful hadith from the Prophet where he says that knowledge is more than you can comprehend, more than you can understand. And so Rasulullah says that because of the fact that knowledge is so vast and varied, he says, take the best of what you need from it. Take the best of what you need. If you want to become a doctor, become the best in that field. If you want to become an engineer, work towards being the best of engineers. If you want to become a cake decorator, become the best cake decorator that you can be. These are all sciences, ways of earning a livelihood, helping communities, helping society. The Prophet says, go and become, or look at the knowledge and choose what you need, but take the best of that particular field. When Amir al-Mu'mineen spoke about knowledge, and you know, just as a side note, the emphasis we know on knowledge is so much within Islam that it's almost a shame if we have a community of men or women who don't take advantage of the opportunities that we have, especially living in North America. You know, we have grants that we can get to study. You have maybe, within our community, there will be scholarships that we can avail. Maybe you're a bright student, you can get a scholarship to study. There is really no excuse for us living in North America and not being professionals in a particular field, whether it be religious studies or even what we would deem as secular studies. And I'll look at that very briefly tonight. There's no excuse for anybody to say, well, you know, I'm unemployed because I didn't get an education. Obviously, circumstances are unique. I don't want to put people in a particular bucket and categorize them. But especially for the young women and men, we have so much of an opportunity to go forth and get knowledge and to make the best of the place that we're living in and the time and the era that we're currently in. When Amir al-Mu'mineen spoke about knowledge, and again, there's so many hadith. In fact, when you look at our books of tradition, Al-Kafi, which is one of the earliest collections of hadith, book number 2 is all about the importance and the merit of knowledge. And it's available in English, the translation of Al-Kafi, with an in-depth commentary of every single hadith within the book. You see how the Prophet and Imams, how they emphasize on knowledge, the importance. Not just seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave, we've heard that. We know that it is an obligation on men and women to seek knowledge. Islam never said that women sit at home and be homemakers and raise kids and just do that. No, Islam said women also have to go and seek knowledge, religious or secular. It's an obligation on everybody. But when Amir al-Mu'mineen wanted to delineate knowledge, he wanted to categorize knowledge, he says that knowledge is of two types. He says, ilmul adyan wa ilmul abdan. Knowledge of the divine and knowledge of the profane. Knowledge that will become that which brings us closer to Allah through learning about our ideology, our religion, learning about Allah, learning about the oneness of Allah, about prophethood, all of the things that religion entails. Or, he says, ilmul abdan, knowledge of the secular world, if we want to call it that. But even there's a definition problem, which I'll again mention a bit later. But Imam Ali says that knowledge of adyan, knowledge of religion, of the divine, he says that is what will purify your soul. It will get you closer to Allah, to God. And he says the second form of knowledge, that would take care of your material needs. So we have both needs within our society. Each and every one of us needs to have both forms of knowledge within our lives. It's not enough to say, well, I have a sheikh in the community, I have an alima, a lady scholar in my community, I don't have to go and get religious knowledge. No, they are there to supplement our knowledge. They're not there to be the only, you know, the only repository that we only go to them. We also as believers have to do our part to gain whatever knowledge we can of what we need. And then obviously if we fall short, if we don't have answers to all of our questions, then we go to our local scholars, we go further and we get the answers that we need. But we don't use them as the only crutch within a society. They're a part of our system and we have to give them the support that they need. We have to empower them to empower us. But we have to realize that each and every one of us has a responsibility of gaining knowledge about the religion and especially the teachings of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad alayhim wassalatu wassalam. And when we go back right to how the Quran talks about the need of teachers in the society, the need to guide, Allah tells us in Surah Al-Jumu'ah, a chapter which each and every one of us hopefully recite every Friday when we attend the Friday prayers, we listen to it, maybe we read it on our own, because as you know, as scholars tell us, it's mustahab to read Surah Al-Jumu'ah in your prayers on Thursday night for Maghrib and Isha, it's mustahab to read Surah Jummah. On Friday for Fajr, it's mustahab, read Surah Jummah and Surah Munafiqun. It's a recommendation if we can follow with that. In Surah Jummah, in verse number 2, Allah tells us 4 responsibilities that the Prophet was given. Allah tells us that it is He, Allah, who sent from amongst the illiterate, the Ummiyun, the people of Mecca, a messenger from that community. And Allah tells us that He had 4 roles in the guidance of humanity. Allah says, وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ He works to purify society. وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةِ That He also teaches people the book and the wisdom. And there's other parts of this verse, I don't want to go over the entire verse. But He says that the job of a prophet, the job of the messenger, is not just to say, here's the book, take it, read it, and act upon it. No, the messenger of God was not a postman. He was not a mailman that just delivered the message and he was out. He was an active participant in teaching the book to the society. He was active in being a teacher of the book of Allah through his own example and through the instruction given to him by Allah. So Rasulullah became a teacher of the book, a teacher of the wisdom, which according to some definition is the sunnah of Rasulullah, the tradition of Rasulullah. So the job of every prophet that came was to become a teacher for society. And when that carries on to us, it becomes our responsibility that when we gain knowledge on any field, especially religious knowledge, that we go forth and we don't hoard that knowledge. We don't just keep it to ourselves. No, we make an effort in whatever way possible to use that knowledge, to teach it to the next generation. And so we see that one of the first institutions that our pioneers of our communities formed when we moved to North America was to establish religious centers and have the majalis, a form of education. We also established madrasas, these Sunday schools or Saturday schools, to ensure that our children, that next generation, had the minimal requirements, whatever we could impart to them, to ensure that they were able to carry forth their obligations to Allah. And so this became a tradition that we took based on the guidance of the Quran, to learn, to implement, and then to teach it to the forthcoming generations. And this again becomes the role of the prophets and those who are following in the roles of the noble prophets of Allah. As I mentioned, however, that when we look at the word, the way that Amir al-Mu'mineen defined knowledge, he said that knowledge is of two types. Either knowledge of the sacred, knowledge of the divine, knowledge of Allah, or knowledge of the profane, knowledge of the secular sciences. One of the things that many of our scholars, especially the late Ayatollah Shaheed Murtada Mutahhari, one of the things that he did in one of his discussions is to look at this topic, that do we actually have a differentiation between secular and religious knowledge? Is mathematics religious or is it a secular knowledge? Is biology religious knowledge, a religious science, or is it secular? Is the Quran, where do you put all of these branches of knowledge? And he brought forth a very interesting definition. When he looked at this differentiator, or these two different groups, we could say, of knowledge, he came forth and he said that whatever knowledge is of benefit to Muslim society, he says that becomes, by its nature, by its definition, religious knowledge. So if a community of believers needs engineers, engineering becomes a religious science. If a community needs doctors, in his definition, medicine would become a religious science, and so on and so forth. And we can look at that from any branch of knowledge that a society needs. Because obviously, whether we like it or not, we've moved to this country, there is no going back home. For many people, especially the young women and men who are born in Canada, this is home. They don't have dual nationality. They don't have another passport to go back. This is home. And if this is going to be home, and we've invested millions of dollars in infrastructure, in beautiful centers, in making sure that our religious needs are met, if this is going to be home, then we also have to realize that we need a community of believers who have knowledge in all the different aspects of life, all the different sciences that we need to build a functional society. Everything that we realize that our 12th Imam will need, we also have to ensure that we have young men and women within our communities who are able to come and rise to the occasion and using their brains, using the knowledge which is available from the universities, from the institutes, to make the most use of that and to become equipped and prepared to help and assist the 12th Imam, Imam al-Hujjah, when he makes his advent to bring forth that government of justice and equality. Salu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. There's a very interesting story of an event that happens at the time of Rasulullah to show us the place of knowledge within Islam. You know, in our communities, this might not happen too often, but it shows us that if it were ever to occur, where we should be going. The story is like this, that Rasulullah is in Medina, he's in his city, he walks into the masjid. And when he walks into the masjid, you know, keep in mind first of all that at the time of the Prophet, and even today if you go to Muslim countries, you'll see that the masjid is not just a place of worship, it's not just to pray, not just a place of ibadat in that sense that we understand worship. The masjid is a multi-purpose facility. You know, you'd have educational events, the Prophet would be doing counseling, he would have husband and wife disputes, he would have to mediate. The masjid was really, it was a courtroom, it was a mosque to pray in, it was an area where children would play. There were many things happening in the mosque of the Prophet. You know, we sometimes maintain a masjid and we say, well, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. And yes, there are limits of what you can and can't do in a masjid. But also we see at the time of the Prophet, it was a multi-purpose, a multifunctional usage facility. So the Prophet walks into the mosque and he sees two groups of people. On one corner, there are people who are making dua. There's a dhikr session. There's some duas being done. People are gathered, making dua, praying to Allah. And he looks at another side of the mosque, and there's a group of people engaging in religious discourse. They're debating, they're talking, they're maybe analyzing ayat of the Quran. They're discussing things the Prophet has spoken about, the obligations, the prohibitions. You know, what is this religion about, Islam about, how do we follow it, whatever the discussion was. And he looks at both of them, and he talks to some of the companions who are nearby to him. And he says that both of these gatherings are good. Both this session of remembrance of God is good, it's good to do dua. And he says the session of where people are working to gain knowledge is also good. But he says, if you're giving me a choice where to go, he says, I'd rather go where the ignorant will gain knowledge, where those who don't know Islam are going to learn about what the religion is. And so we're told that he walks towards the gathering of the people who are discussing religion, and he leaves the gathering of the du'as. It should show us that the importance of knowledge within our religion. You know, sometimes we make it a ritual, especially the month of Ramadan. You know, just as in Ramadan we have this menu for iftar, you know, the ladies' committee or whoever does the cooking in the community, they'll put together a menu. We'll have namaz, and then we'll have some chai to break it. We'll have some samosa, some bhajia, I don't know, dar, saak, and whatever is our menu for food. And then we'll have our menu for duas. We'll have dua iftata, 14 minutes. This dua, 6 minutes. That dua, 8 minutes. And we try to get to the end of the menu of duas, just as we got to the end of our menu of food. But do we understand what we're reciting in the du'as? Keep in mind, du'as are not bad. It's a good idea to recite du'as. I'm not saying don't do the menu of du'as. But du'as are mustahab. It's recommended to make a du'a. Du'a kumail is a recommendation once in our lifetime. Once a year on the 15th of Sha'aban. If we can do it every week, all the better, every Thursday night. But knowledge is an obligation. Rasulullah said, seek knowledge is an obligation. It's not recommended to seek knowledge, it's an obligation. So if an obligation is there and a recommendation is there, obviously we do the obligation. If we have time, we go to the recommendation. And so when we have the month of Ramadan, and you have an opportunity to either sit in a discussion where maybe tafsir is being explained, maybe one of our local scholars, male or female, is giving lectures on a topic, and you have an option to either sit there or do your own du'as or mustahab prayers, it makes more sense to do the knowledge, because that's an obligation. That's going to clear ambiguities in our religion. It's going to help me become better, because I'm now learning my responsibility to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. But as I say that, I also realize that, and we all have to appreciate that, not all knowledge is something that we should take in. Not all knowledge is beneficial to us. Even there are times, and I'll say this with great precaution, There are times when even some religious knowledge, or what we would call religious knowledge, is of no benefit to us. It makes no difference. For example, we know that the 12th Imam has been alive for over 1,200 years, or close to 1,200 years. People go to our Grand Maharaja and say, is the 12th Imam married? Does he have children? What does he eat for lunch? These are questions that people ask. What difference does it make if he has, you know, a hamburger or kebab for lunch? Does it make your iman any more higher in the 12th Imam? If you know that he has 6 kids and 2 are girls and 4 are boys, does it make any difference in our level of closeness to the 12th Imam? Is it a question that Allah will ask me in my grave when I die? How many children did your Imam have? Does it matter if we know how many people were killed in the Battle of Uhud, and this man hit this man, and this many people died in this battle? They're good things to know, they're not bad. But we say in the dua of Asr, we ask Allah for protection from ilmin la yanfa'u, knowledge which doesn't benefit me. It doesn't benefit me, it doesn't make me a better believer if I know it. And it doesn't make me a less of a mu'min if I don't know that knowledge. You know, this is, let me give you a story, an example of what useless knowledge is all about. One day Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, may God's peace and blessings be upon him. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. After he's given this caliphate, he's in the masjid on the minbar, speaking to hundreds of people. And he makes a statement, he says, Saluni qabla an tafkiduni. Ask me before you lose me. Ask me anything you want. Ask me any question in the world you want before I leave this world. And who could make such a claim other than the commander of the faithful? Because you know that the Prophet said that I'm the city of knowledge and Ali is the gate. So whatever you want to know, go to the gate and ask the question and you'll get the answer. But there were foolish people at the time of Imam Ali. There were people who were simpletons. You know, there were people who were very simple-minded in their understanding. So a man stands up in this majlis, in the gathering, and he's a man that we all know. Sa'ad ibn Abi Waqas. We know him because his son is Umar ibn Sa'ad. Mal'un, the one who instrumented and was directly responsible for why we are here for these 10 nights. We know what Umar ibn Sa'ad did. His father was no better than the son. Sa'ad ibn Abi Waqas stands up in the middle of the majlis of Imam Ali. He says, O Commander of the Faithful, he says, you've said to ask you any question, I have a question for you. Now maybe he wants to ask, you know, how far is the moon from earth? How many years would it take to travel? Maybe he wants to ask about, I don't know, some nuclear energy, I don't know. He asks the most preposterous of questions. He says, tell me how many hairs I have on my head. And how many hairs are on my beard? How many hairs are on my head? You've got a man who is the gate to the city of knowledge and you're asking him such a ludicrous question as how many hairs are on my head? So Imam Ali, he didn't, you know, just shoot the man down and tell him to sit down and be quiet. He answered him. He says, you want to know how many hairs are on your head? He says, I won't tell you the number, but I'll tell you this. That every hair on your head, there is an angel appointed to that hair, and those angels are making dua for Allah to remove His mercy from you. They're sending la'nat upon you. They're making dua against you. You want to know how many hairs are on your face? How many hairs in your beard? He says, don't worry about the number, but understand that with every hair on your beard, there's a devil, and it's going to push you towards the wrong path. Because you are on that path already, they're going to help you along the way. And he said, I'll tell you something else. He says, you have an animal of a son who's going to kill my son in the future. Meaning that his son, Umar ibn Sa'd, would be responsible for what happened in Karbala. Imam Ali didn't give him the number of hairs, but he gave him something much more profound and deeper than that. And he showed us that, you know, how can you be so simple in your outlook that you have a man like the Commander of the Faithful who has knowledge of the entire world given to him by Allah in the palm of his hand, and you ask him such a trivial question. So for us that becomes a lesson, that when we have scholars in our midst, and we have scholars in this community who are here, who come and go, who are residents, we should make the best use of them, whether they're on this side of the wall or the other side. If they're scholars, if they have studied, we need to give them the respect that they deserve for dedicating their life to studying Islam and giving us of what they have learned, and not with trivial questions. Is music haram? Because we know it's not haram. Is this haram? Is that haram? Is it haram to go to this restaurant? These are things which, yes, are important, but in the grand scheme of things, these are not questions that we would ask of these individuals. Sometimes people go to our maraja, and you see the questions in the books, and they're questions which you could easily Google and find the answer for. They've been asked a million times before. And so the example from Imam Ali's life and the dua of Asr should show you and I that there is knowledge which has no benefit. Don't bother with it. Don't ask it. Because it's no use for you and I in this world or in the world to come. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Let me speak a few minutes about religious knowledge. Because we are, it's a given that we need to get secular knowledge of the world around us to make money, to have a career, to maintain our lives, our standard of life, to maintain our centers and all the things that we do with our money. But what about the other side of the equation? Is it really necessary to get religious knowledge at any level? I mentioned again in the beginning that sometimes we rely on our scholarship just to answer every question. Maybe we'll call our scholar up in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. Is it time to pray namaz al-shab right now? Should I pray it now or should I wait? And this has happened where people will call their scholar in residence at 2 in the morning. Should I pray namaz al-shab or should I wait? We should know simple answers within our life. In fact, Ayatollah Sistani and all of the maraja have a similar ruling. If you look in Sayyid Sistani's Risala, rule number 15, he clearly says that it is an obligation on a believer to learn those aspects of Islam that you have a daily need for. Now, I'm not a fisherman. I don't hunt animals. So you know what? I'm not going to bother reading how to fish or how to hunt. But I have to pray on a daily basis. So I need to know how to pray. I run my own business, so I need to know the rules of business. I fast the month of Ramadan, so I need to know that. Am I going for Hajj next month? I'm not going. So you know what? I don't bother with that. But whatever I need, whatever each and every one of us in this room needs to become closer to Allah through following our obligations, that's an obligation for you and I to learn. And you know, sometimes people say, well, it's better if I don't learn. You know, ignorance is bliss, as we hear. I don't know it, so it's all the better. If I don't know it, it's easier for me to lead a life. I'm sure we've heard this before, maybe we feel the same. But let me assure you that knowledge, as Imam Ali said and I mentioned in the beginning, that knowledge is king. Knowledge is power. When I know Islam, it makes my life easier. Sometimes we think that if I know about the rulings of obligations and prohibitions, my life becomes more difficult. But I would actually propose that knowing about Islam makes our life much easier to follow. Knowing the rulings of my marja make my life easier. In what way? Let me give you a few examples. Our namaz, our five daily prayers, we know that we have to perform them in a certain way. What happens if we forget to do something, or we do double of something? We could either repeat the whole prayer from the beginning. If it's a dhuhr prayer, that's another 5 minutes of our day wasted or gone. I don't want to say wasted, but it's time we could have better spent in something else. But if I knew the rules, if I made a mistake, I can just make a quick one rakat prayer sitting down or standing up. Then I can repair a problem in my prayer within a minute, rather than having to redo an entire prayer. So where is the harm in knowledge? There I've actually done a benefit to myself, because I made a mistake. No problem, we all make mistakes. But I was able to rectify it, and rectify it in a much easier way than redoing the entire prayer. Another example, living in the West. When I go out there and I go shopping, or I'm talking to people, or I'm meeting people, and I live in a non-Muslim society, and I meet somebody, do I presume that they are Muslim or non-Muslim? What do I do? Would I presume that if I meet somebody that they're a Muslim or not? We probably say, well, we presume they're non-Muslim, correct? Right? Yes? No? Yes? Yes? Ayatollah Sistani says, quite the contrary. When you live in a non-Muslim society and you meet somebody, you presume they're Muslim unless you have some proof to confirm they're a non-Muslim. So that in itself clears so many challenges. If I'm presuming that the guy I just met is a Muslim, I don't have to worry about a lot of things. Yes, for marriage it's a different issue. You have to investigate. For haram and halal meat and food, you have to investigate. To bury that person in our graveyard, you have to investigate. But day-to-day interaction, you don't presume they're a non-Muslim. Just because their name is John or Lisa, that doesn't mean they're not a Muslim. She doesn't wear hijab, it doesn't mean she's not a Muslim. He has a cross around his neck. I've seen Muslims who unfortunately wear crosses as a fashion statement. It's cool to wear it. I don't assume they're a non-Muslim unless I know for sure. Yeah, now if he has a red turban on, chances are he's not a Muslim. Or he's a Maulana who's really into funky colors with his turban. But I don't assume unless I know for sure. Now if I know that, it made my life so much easier. So much easier. A last example is what many of our youth face. Entertainment, music. We hear that all music is haram. So now I have to turn off the radio, I don't go into the malls, I don't do this, I don't do that. But Ayatollah Sistani again says in his code of practice that music is an art form that has spread around the world. He says some of it is haram and some of it is halal. So he says enjoy the halal and keep away from the haram. Now if I don't know that some music is halal, I'm going to just say everything is haram. And when we do that to our children, when we say there's no permissible means of entertainment in Islam, I've seen this backfire in examples in front of me, where kids say, well, if everything is haram in Islam, then forget about religion. I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't go here, I can't go there. I'm just going to become a Christian. Leave Islam, become an atheist. But if we realize that Islam has limits, and there are things which are permissible and impermissible, then I'll learn the permissible, and I'll run with it. I'll enjoy that part of life. I'll go to restaurants where I'm allowed to go. I won't inquire, is your cook a Muslim or not? Did they touch the food or not? Did they do this? Did they do that? Ask their religion. And you can look in the book of Sayyid Sistani. Don't take my word for it. Look at his book, A Code of Practice for Muslims in the West. He clarifies all of this with complete clarity. How do you go to a restaurant? How do you find out what is halal and haram? Music, what is allowed, what is not allowed? They're all there in the book, so it's not my own concoction of his rulings. But when I realize that these are, and this is knowledge I'm gaining of Islam, it doesn't limit me in my Islam. Now it opens up a whole new perspective on Islam. What can I do? What can't I do? Where can I go? Where can't I go? How can I interact with the opposite gender in a permissible fashion? What is allowed? What is not allowed? I haven't put barriers on my Islam. I've actually opened up vistas and a greater horizon in appreciating Islam. And so as the 12th Imam says, that وَمْلَا قُلُوبَنَا بِالْإِلْمِ وَالْمَعْرِفَةِ, fill my heart with knowledge and cognizance of ma'rifat, of this religion. It's not so I'm in a narrow box that I can't live life, I become a hermit in my own little closet. No, it gives me and gives all of us the opportunity to really live a beautiful life in which we can submit and obey Allah while still maintaining the boundaries of our religion, still ensuring we do the permissible and we keep away from the forbidden. And when we begin to go on that path of seeking knowledge, as the hadith also tell us, that when we take that step towards gaining knowledge, that Allah will come closer to us. Hadith tell us when a person takes one step towards gaining better understanding of Islam, of their obligation, that the path becomes expansive, it becomes much more wide and open and easy for them to continue down that path. But if we stay in our own ignorance, in our compound ignorance, not realizing our religion, then we fall into that prey of Satan, who will tell us to do things which are haram, which are forbidden. But when I know that things are permissible, then I'll enjoy Islam. I'll enjoy my life. I'll enjoy company with my spouse. I'll enjoy my time with my children. I'll enjoy everything of life which Allah has permitted me to enjoy. But that will only come when we as a community, we as individuals, go and get the right knowledge from the right source and understand it and implement it in the way that the grand scholars have explained to us, as has been taught to them by Muhammad and Ali Muhammad alayhim wassalatu wassalam. And as we continue these nights of Muharram, tonight being the third night of this tragic month of Muharram, where we commemorate the martyrdom of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam, he shows us that knowledge is something which we always have to continue to seek. You know, when you study the movement of Imam Hussein, when he left Medina to Mecca, he leaves Mecca on his way towards Kufa, being intercepted in Karbala. His mission was also one of education. It was one of conveying knowledge to the communities. There are books which we have today of the sermons that Imam Hussein gave. He talked to the people. He told them, he was giving them knowledge of what was happening in the world. What was Islam all about? He was equipping them with the power of knowledge to be able to counter any kind of waves and currents against humanity in the time to come. He wasn't just a movement of weeping and shedding tears. He was giving us a movement of knowledge. Those sermons are preserved till today, brothers and sisters. And as Imam Hussein alayhi salam walked with his caravan towards Karbala, every step of the way he was giving knowledge back to the community. He was equipping those believers with what they needed to know to become better servants of Allah. We're told in the books of Maqtal that as Sayyidah Shuhada arrived on that land of Karbala on the 2nd of Muharram, that one day after that, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd began to make their way towards Karbala. They had left Kufa, the army forces had left Kufa. And according to the narrations, that Umar ibn Sa'd had over 3,000 soldiers with him on the initial group who intercepted Imam Hussein. As Imam arrived in Karbala, as we talked about last night, when he disembarked on that land of Karbala, after he had spoken to the people who were living in that vicinity, one of the things that Imam Hussein did is he saw in the distance one of the tribes of Bani Zuhra, and he brought them and he talked to them and he asked what the name of this land was, and some of them gave different names, including Ghadiriya. And eventually Imam Hussein talked to them and he negotiated a price for that land of Karbala. The historians mention that Imam Hussein gave this tribe 60,000 silver coins, and he said, I'm buying this little piece of land of Karbala for 60,000 silver coins. But he made a condition with that tribe. He says, I'm giving you this money to buy my property where I'm going to be buried. I'm buying this qabr, this grave for myself and my family. But he says, I ask you just two things that you do. He says, the first thing I ask you is that when any of my zawar come, he says that I ask you that this money I've given you, please use it as a wage that when people come and ask you where I'm buried, that you show them my grave. And he says that when my zuwar come to pay their respects to me in Karbala, he says, use a bit of this money to treat them as guests, feed them, take care of them for up to 3 days. The tribe accepted this request of Imam Hussein. We're told that he buys this property of Karbala, the same land that you and I go to and pay our respects to Imam Hussein, that this is actually the home of Imam Hussein. He bought this land with his own hard-earned money. That we go to the qabr of Imam Hussein, which is actually his property. We're told that as the third day of Muharram, as the sun rises, that Umar ibn Sa'd, the same one who would question, the son of the one who questioned Imam Ali, that they arrive in Karbala, that there's 3,000 soldiers ready to begin the offensive against Abu Abdullah. When Umar ibn Sa'd sees Sayyidah Shuhada, and he sees who is with him, one of the enemies in his army tells Umar ibn Sa'd, he says that, are you really going to wage this war against the son of the Messenger of Allah? At one point, Umar ibn Sa'd feels a bit of trepidation. He's a bit concerned that maybe what he's doing is not the right thing. He writes back to the governor in Kufa. The governor in Kufa, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, says that you need to go through with what I've ordered you to do. He continues to amass that army. Day after day after day, the troops begin to amass. They begin to put the pressure on Sayyid al-Shuhada. They began to put this difficulty on Imam Hussein and the family. And eventually, as we go through these days and nights, we will see what kind of difficulties Abu Abdullah had been put through. Whether it be the cutting off of the water and the access to the river, whether it be the difficulties in the heat, that every day, day after day, that the family was being in the desert of Karbala, that they were being put through so many tragedies and tribulations, that definitely that land of Karbala lived up to its name, the land of tribulation and difficulties and sorrow and grief. وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّ لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. Matame Hussein.
ہم ہی ہے پل جتل میری کیا ہے خطا مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا لہی ہو مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا لہی ہو کیا میں زہرا کا جایا لہی ہو کیا میں زہرا کا جایا لہی ہو کیا میں زہرا کا جایا لہی ہو کیا نبی کا نواسا لہی ہو مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا لہی ہو
میرے کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی
میرے نانا نے کلمہ سکھایا اور قرآن تم کو سنایا میرے نانا نے کلمہ سکھایا اور قرآن تم کو سنایا کیا میں نانا کا سایہ نہیں ہوں کیا میں نانا کا سایہ نہیں ہوں کیا میں نانا کا سایہ نہیں ہو کیا نبی کا نواسا نہیں ہو مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا نہیں ہو بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا نہیں ہو وہ مدینہ جہاں میرا گھر ہے اور مسجد میں اس گھر کا در ہے وہ مدینہ جہاں میرا گھر ہے اور مسجد میں اس گھر کا در ہے کیا میں اس گھر میں اکیلا نہیں ہوں کیا میں اس گھر میں اکیلا نہیں ہوں کیا میں اس گھر میں اکیلا نہیں ہوں کیا نبی کا نواسا نہیں ہو کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا نہیں چکیا پیس کر ماں نے پالا مجھ کو نالا نے جھولا جھلایا چکیا پیس کر ماں نے پالا مجھ کو نانا نے جھولا جھلایا اپنا بچپن میں بھولا نہیں ہوں اپنا بچپن میں بھولا نہیں ہوں اپنا بچپن میں بھولا نہیں ہوں کیا نبی کا نواسا نہیں ہوں مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا نہیں ہو مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی کیا محمد کا پیارا نہیں ہو یا میں زہرا کا جایا نہیں ہوں یا میں زہرا کا جایا نہیں ہوں یا میں زہرا کا جایا نہیں کیا نبی کا نواسا نہیں ہو مجھ پہ کیوں بلے کرتے ہو پالی یا محمد کا پیارا نہیں ہو
یا حسین یا حسین یا
سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا جب سامنے آتا ہے جب سامنے آتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا
کاٹا ہے گلا لوگو سہ روز کے پیاسے کا پامال ہوا لاشا احمد کے نواسے کا احمد کے نواسے کا ہر ایک کو بتاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا ہم صورت زہرا سے بھائی کے بچھڑنے کی خاتون قیامت کے گھر بار اجڑنے کی گھر بار اجڑنے کی روداد سناتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا تصویر دکھاتا ہے احمد کی جوانی کی ہر شخص کو دنیا میں کربل کی کہانی کی کربل کی کہانی کی تفسیر بتاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا سگرا کو رلاتا ہے یہ چاند محرم کا یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین پر محمد و آل محمد صلی اللہ
علیہ وسلم
Before we conclude with the visitation, the ziyarat of the Prophet and Imams, let us recite Amayjibu five times. Specifically, we have requests for Brother Liaquat Asaria in Dubai, who is in very critical condition. Well, let us ask Allah, by the haq of the 14 masjidin, especially Sayyidu Shuhada, that Allah gives this individual and all of those in our family and our community who are in any form of difficulty, health issues, a speedy recovery by Amayjibu five times altogether, please. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم عما يجيب المضطر إذا دعا ويكشف السوء 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 اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد السلام عليك يا رسول الله السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا فاطمة الزهراء سيدة النساء العالمين السلام عليك يا حسن بن علي المجتبى السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته السلام عليكم يا أئمة المسلمين علي بن حسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي السلام عليكم يا حجة ابن حسن يا صاحب الأسر والزمان الأمان 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 من فتنة الزمان السلام عليك يا شريك القرآن السلام عليك يا كعبة الإيمان السلام عليك يا إمامنا وإمام الإنس والجان أجل الله تعالى فرجك وسهل الله تعالى مخرجك وظهورك وجعلنا من أنصارك وأعوانك وشيتك وزوارك والمستشهدين بين يديك السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته
Brothers, please be seated. Thank you.
Brothers, please be seated. I promise I'm not going to take too much of your time. It's going to be short announcements, but important ones. Thank you. Just to reiterate on the parking, we're still having a request from the ladies' side that the men are parking on that side. The stalls parallel to the Sikh temple, please try not to park there. And if you're parking in a handicapped spot, make sure you have a badge displaying that too. Also, smoking is not allowed on the premises or on the parking areas as well. On Friday, October the 7th, 5th of Muharram, brothers, may I please have your attention please for a second? Brother Karar, can I have a... Let's do it later. Thank you. Thank you. On Friday, October the 7th, 5th of Muharram, there will be a majlis in Urdu immediately after the Jummah Salat in the masjid. We had the same program last year as well. Majlis will be recited by our visiting scholar, Maulana Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Rizvi, who is from Karachi, Pakistan. Request for all of you to attend to convey our condolences to Lady Fatima on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions in Karbala. The barak will be served after the program. As you know, every year during the first 10 days of Muharram, we encourage and empower the youths to hold a full program and facilitate the whole program. So this coming Friday, 7th of October, the youth will be facilitating the entire program for the night. They have asked to please convey the following message to you and all support the youths of our community. So here is the message from the youths of our Zarak. In our daily lives, there are many factors that have an impact on us. What we eat has an incredible impact on our lives. Our body is always changing and using what we eat to replace it. Further, what we eat has a spiritual aspect on us as well. Come to Azara Youth Committee Youth Talks Muharram program to find out more about why we eat halal and what the benefits of halal and zabiha food is. We will be having Sheikh Salim Bhimji and Sister Leila Akbar providing us with the insights into the topics. Program will begin at 7:30 p.m. after Salat in the gym on Friday, 7th of October. I encourage all to attend to support our youths. Thank you for your time. Muhammad Nawali Muhammad Salawat.